Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Josh Schlossberg. He's a Denver, Colorado-based investigative journalist who writes about ecology, wildlife, climate change, and energy for various publications, including Enviro News, Truth Out, Earth Island Journal, Denver Westward, and Boulder Weekly. You can follow him on Twitter at @JOSHSCHLOSSBERG. Today we talk about state governments working together to impede Mexican wolf recovery. So first, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
So let's start with a little discussion of a little background. Who are Mexican wolves? What, say, was their status prior to the beginning of the recovery program? And then after that, we'll talk about the recovery program. And then after that, we'll talk about the states harming it.
Sure, that sounds good. So the Mexican wolf is a subspecies of the gray wolf. It's actually called the Mexican gray wolf. So Canis lupus is the gray wolf. The Mexican wolf is the Canis lupus baleyi. It's also known as El Lobo. And that was a creature that lived throughout the Southwest for many millennia. There's actually a little bit of debate because since it separated from the other subspecies, it became a subspecies of the gray wolf. Obviously, the gray wolf has been across the western U.S. and Canada for ages. At some point in time, it separated into a different subspecies. So its historic range of the Mexican wolf is a little bit in debate. However, most of the government agencies claim that the historic range of the Mexican wolf was Mexico, of course, and then also Arizona and New Mexico. So over the period of 1800s and 1900s, like wolves in general, the Mexican wolf was hunted. It was thought to be, you know, competition to livestock. People were just afraid of wolves. They hated wolves, whatever the reason. They were hunted into almost extinction during the 1800s and 1900s. And then it was in 1976, it got protection under the Endangered Species Act. And in 1982, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they launched what was the original Mexican wolf recovery plan. So the goal was simply to keep the keystone predator from becoming completely extinct. And at the time, they really didn't have very high hopes. They thought maybe they could preserve a token number in the wild. And what they did is they had a captive breeding program. So they had a few strains of Mexican wolves that they had captive bred, and they released those into the wild over the years, and it actually did better than they thought. So today there's about 113 Mexican wolves in Arizona and New Mexico, and there are 31 in Mexico. It's down in Chihuahua and Sonora. That's kind of good news, but it really doesn't make sure that the species is going to exist into the future. So the numbers are pretty limited as they are. And the other issues is that there's pretty poor genetic variability. So basically inbreeding. So the concern with inbreeding is that the animals are not as robust. They're not as healthy. And the other concern is that there's not a lot of high quality habitat left because humans have destroyed most of the habitat and the forests and the other lands in which they live. There's humans that are really close, and that disrupts the wolves' ability to prosper. And so over the years, the Fish and Wildlife Service had been working on this wolf recovery plan, the Mexican wolf recovery plan, but they were kind of dragging their heels, at least according to conservation groups. So back in 2014, a few of those groups decided to sue the Fish and Wildlife Service for delaying that completion of the plan. So because of a settlement, the agency decided, okay, we'll have the final plan out in November of 2017. And so they just released that a couple months ago. And the plan itself, the purpose is, according to the Fish and Wildlife Service, is to create two, quote, genetically diverse Mexican wolf populations, and that would be distributed across areas of the range or the historic range in the U.S. and Mexico. And it's estimated to cost about $180 million, and that's going to be paid for by federal state government agencies and NGOs as well. and they have a specific number that they're trying to reach with this plan. So the number would be 320 wolves in the U.S. and 200 in Mexico. Obviously, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't have much of a say of what goes on in Mexico, but the plan would be to have 320 of them in the U.S. over the next 2 to 3 decades, and then they would delist them from the endangered species list. So at that point, all the protections afforded to the Mexican wolf would be removed. Sometimes that's a good thing, right? You have enough numbers that it doesn't have to be considered endangered, but a lot of scientists and a lot of conservation groups say that that number is way too low to delist them. And I can get into a few other details of what's going on, unless you have any questions for me right now, Derek.
Well, so far that, I mean, the fact that they want to establish these two populations, I mean, that part is at least sort of good, right? I mean, this is, so far, we would like the numbers higher, we would like them not removed from protection, but so far that part of the plan is okay, right?
Yeah, of course. The idea of establishing protections for the wolf is a good thing, and the Fish and Wildlife Service does deserve due credit for having brought them back from the literal brink of extinction. So that's pretty good, but there are some concerns with what the plan is looking to do, and I can get into those if you like.
Yeah, let's Before we give too much credit to the Fish and Wildlife Service, and mm-hmm. I do want to say, I know a lot of individuals who work for the Fish and Wildlife Service who
right.
are often very dedicated and doing great work, which doesn't yep. alter the fact that, as you said earlier, Fish and Wildlife Service had, as an organization, had to be sued to do the right thing, which happens every damn time, pretty much.
Yeah, they've definitely been delaying the release of the plan. That can't be contested. They've been taking a long time to put things together.
Well, since later on we're going to talk about sabotaging plans, I want to mention one thing, and then we'll move on. And the thing yeah. I want to mention is that something very important to my own political awakening or environmental awakening or whatever was that George Bush the First said he wanted to destroy the Endangered Species Act or harm it or weaken it. And this was a big rallying cry. And then he was not reelected. And Bill Clinton, who talked about supporting it, what he did is defund many of the programs. So Bill Clinton actually put a smiling face on doing more harm to the agency than Bush did. And my point in bringing all that up is both Democrats and Republicans, oftentimes, the Democrats can give lip service to endangered species, but both Democrats and Republicans work in their own ways often to delay the recovery of species, which is sort of foreshadowing of where we're going later.
Yeah, I think that is an important point. Some of the, not to speak ill of them, but some of the conservation groups that were working on the Mexican wolf plan and criticizing it, they were saying it was because of the Trump administration. Well, the reality is a lot of the dawdling had been happening under the Obama administration. So I think it's safe to say that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are looking out for the best interest of wildlife.
Yes. Okay. So now let's go on with some of the problems of the plan.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that sometimes there are some good folks who are in these agencies, and I think that's true. There's a lot of well-meaning folks. There is a fellow named David Parsons, and he was the former Mexican wolf recovery coordinator for the Fish and Wildlife Service from 1990 to 99, and he was a part of what was called the Science and Planning subgroup of that recovery team. So in 2011, they had recommended a minimum of 750 wolves in the U.S. and 100 in Mexico, and that would be like three separate populations of 200 to 300 wolves before delisting. So keep in mind that the current plan, the plan that was put out there, says just 320 wolves. The scientists said, no, there needs to be 750 wolves. So that's one of the main issues that the conservation groups and scientists are pointing out with the current, the final Mexican wolf recovery plan, is that those numbers are actually too low. And there's a bit of a story on how it's theorized that this came about. So in theory, right, the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service was considering these numbers. That was its own scientific group that it put in place to make those recommendations. But what happened was when those numbers were released back in 2011, and I have all the documents to this, it's all in my article on Enviro News, which you can check out. But what Parsons said, this former Fish and Wildlife Service fellow, he said that when those numbers came out in the meeting with stakeholders, so all sorts of stakeholders were involved with it, including ranchers. Well, the ranchers, his quote were, they went ballistic. So they were not happy with those numbers because in their minds, wolves are a threat to the livestock industry. Sometimes there's depredation, but actually it's pretty infrequent and they're usually compensated for that. But still, there is a lot of animosity from hunters and ranchers.
Yeah, I want to put in a little asterisk there on their compensated, because this is something that just I've been working on for decades and it pisses me off.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they are not only compensated, but they are compensated at multiple times market value. So that if they have a cow that they could sell for, I don't know what a cow goes for, if they can say they can sell the cow on the market for $800, they often get like double value if a wolf kills it. Which means if I were a rancher, I would like want the wolf to kill because I'm getting twice the money.
Right.
But leave that aside.
Right. But no, that's a really good point. The livestock industry is not hurting because of the existence of wolves. Nevertheless, politically, they're opposed to it. And those numbers were supposed to be kept internal, but they were leaked right after that meeting. And pro-ranching, pro-hunting voices like U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah, he put out some media and opinion pieces against the plan with these numbers that were supposed to be secret at the time. And it got all over the media. And in response, the Fish and Wildlife Service, they canceled the next meeting of that subgroup of independent scientists and they never held another one. And so that's one component, the numbers component, which is really important. And then the other aspect, which the scientific group was advocating for, was habitat. So we talked a little bit about the historic range, that being Mexico, Arizona, New Mexico, even though that's debated, but let's just assume for the sake of argument that that's true. So the scientists were saying that, well, if all of that land was still intact, that would be fine, but it's not. Obviously, humans live everywhere and the landscape has been despoiled and there's a lot of human encroachment, which means that the historic range is no longer suitable. There are various studies demonstrating that fact. There was a 2015 study in biological conservation, and it said that most of the Mexican wolf's historic range in Mexico is unsuitable due to human activity, and that the chances were the wolves would be killed if there were more of them in that area. So basically, the idea of that historic range is no longer applied, and what they needed was to have a big chunk of land in Arizona and New Mexico, as well as the Grand Canyon region in northern Arizona and southern Utah, and the Southern Rockies region in southern Colorado and northern New Mexico. So that's what the scientists recommended. And the limit, the land. So what the historic range has been arbitrarily put at was below Interstate 40, which is the interstate that runs east-west across northern New Mexico and Arizona. So the final plan did include limiting that range below that. So basically just keeping them in Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico. No wolves would be protected in Utah and Colorado. And what my article was about was if you look back and you find what the states of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona have been advocating for years, it's that the wolves would not be allowed outside of their historic range, which means zero wolves in Colorado, zero wolves in Utah, and none in northern New Mexico and Arizona. So despite the scientists inside the Fish and Wildlife Service saying, no, we need to expand the range, it just so happened that the final plan for the Fish and Wildlife Service, it it accorded exactly to what the states had been demanding. And I can go into some specific examples of what the states were demanding over the years.
Yeah, I would love for you to do that. But before you do that, I want to talk for just a moment about the notion of historic range, which you have mentioned, but especially, well, just yesterday I was interviewing somebody about the harmful effects of the solar power generation facilities in the desert. And they were talking about the mortality of birds associated with them. And this is going to have a point. The point is that one of the birds that has been killed there was a blue-footed booby who typically live in the Galapagos. And my point is that when we talk about a historic range, that is the wolves did not stay south of the land that would sooner become that would someday become I-40. And wolves are especially known for moving. There are packs of wolves have moved into Idaho, and people in Northern California are really either excited or angry, depending on who you are, because there are wolves who just in the normal state of things have made their way down to California. And one more thing before I'll shut up, which is that I was talking to a grizzly bear expert a few months ago who said grizzly bears actually expand their range fairly slowly because the daughters will basically want to hang out kind of near the mothers, but they'll expand it a few miles in one generation. As opposed to wolves can expand, I mean, they can go in one generation a couple hundred miles or further.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw all that out. So before you go into the other stuff, can you talk for a moment about the stuff I was just sort of rambling about?
Yeah, no, I think that's actually completely accurate. Of course, the idea that the wolves stayed below Interstate 40 when it didn't exist is stupid. They drew some arbitrary demarcation. It may well be that over recent centuries, they lived below a certain limit most of the time. It's really hard to say. David Parsons, the guy who used to work with Fish and Wildlife Service, and now I should say he's actually a strong wolf advocate and joins these conservation groups to sue the Fish and Wildlife Service. He is the one who pointed out that, you know, wolves were once distributed from Mexico City up to the Yukon, you know, as the gray wolf, and then when the subspecies separated. So it's kind of dumb to be able to say, no, we know that these creatures didn't move beyond this limit. But it's going to be hard to prove one way or another. What is important, however, and I think that's where the attention should be focused on, is what sort of range do the wolves need to survive? And what sort of land base do they need to perpetuate the species? And the science shows almost unequivocally that they need to expand beyond what was the arbitrary, quote, historic range anyway. So that's no longer even relevant.
So I want to say one more thing about this too, which is if let's pretend that the limit was I-40, what was probably the limiting factor at that point was not a lack of habitat, but was the presence of the non-Mexican gray wolves. That was probably the limit. So the question, there were wolves in Southern Colorado, and the question is whether they were Canis lupus or Canis lupus bali or whatever they're called.
Right, exactly.
And
no, that's a good point.
Okay, anyway, so I don't want to distract from your main very good point about the important thing is the science on what they need to survive. That's actually crucial.
Yeah, no, I think so. And yeah, that is a really interesting point though that you made. It's probably that the gray wolf itself was dominating those other habitats and the Mexican wolf was staying down where it was. But regardless, the scientists do say it needs more range. But the thing is, the states of Colorado and Utah have stated that they do not want wolves in their state. And, same with, Arizona and New Mexico. So the most damning information, and then none of this is secret. This is all out there. And I have links to all this in my article. So there was a joint letter sent by the governors of those four states to it was the Secretary of Interior and the head of the Fish and Wildlife Service at the time. And basically they said in the letter that they did not want the Mexican wolves to go above that arbitrary I-40 boundary. So stating very, very clearly on the record, that means no wolves in Colorado, no Mexican wolves in Colorado, and no Mexican wolves in Utah whatsoever. And then you take a look at some of the other documents and statements that have been made over the years by these different states in regards to wolves, you find that they've been very hostile to the reintroduction of wolves. They stated that they do support the Mexican Wolf Recovery Plan, and they're actually a fan of the current plan because, well, it just so happens to do exactly the things that they want to do. So they're okay with the wolves existing below those boundaries in New Mexico and Arizona. But, for instance, in 2016, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission, they passed a resolution that would oppose the release of any wolf subspecies into the state. So there would not be any captive wolves released into Colorado as of now. And they did state in that they wanted also the Mexican wolf to stay in its historic range. So they've made clear statements about that in the past. And in 2016, the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, they sued the Fish and Wildlife Service to stop the release of captive wolves into the state. And that's still going on. The injunction was granted and then it was overturned. So that's in federal court right now. So stay tuned about that. I'll probably be reporting on that in the future. And this is just an abbreviated list of the things that the states have done to push back wolf recovery. In 2011, the New Mexico Game Commission, so they backed out of the wolf recovery program altogether. They didn't want anything to do with it. That's the state agency of New Mexico. In 2010, Arizona Game and Fish Department, they contacted Congress and they said they wanted the gray wolf and the Mexican wolf to be delisted from the Endangered Species Act. And Utah in 2010 has a bill that would require its Division of Wildlife Resources, so that's their state wildlife agency, to get rid of any wolves found inside of state lines, and they threatened to sue the forest, the Fish and Wildlife Service if the Mexican wolf plan expanded the range into the state. So that's been years of them being pretty obviously opposed to wolf recovery and specifically Mexican wolf recovery, and the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service, based on its own scientific recommendations, was considering more numbers and expanding the range. And then after this state pushback, they ended up doing exactly what the states wanted. So the contention from conservation groups, and I think it's pretty much fact, is that the states didn't want an expansion of the range. They didn't want more numbers for the Mexican gray wolves. The federal government was considering more numbers and greater range, and they decided not to because they didn't want to have to contend with the states. So basically the states wrote this plan, and a lot of the states are thought to be influenced